You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
I just turned 25. When I'm elected this November, I'll be the youngest member of Congress in over 200 years. And if you don't think young people can change the world, then you just don't know American history. George Washington was 21 when he received his first military commission. Abe Lincoln, 22 when he first ran for office. And my personal favorite, James Madison, was just 25 years old when he signed the Declaration of Independence.
August the 27th, 2020. Those are the words of Madison Cawthorn, GOP House candidate, North Carolina 11th Congressional District. And if he's elected, he'll be the youngest member elected to Congress. He's paralyzed from the waist down in a car wreck in 2014. And yet he persists in living his life and contributing. A most powerful statement and remarks by him last night. I want to play some more of his remarks later over the next 2 hours. They're inspiring. I don't care what your politics are. I don't care your color, your skin, your religion. This young man is inspiring. And also, quickly seen as a rising star, possibly, for the Republican Party. Not as hard right as some might want the right to be, and certainly not to the left. But basically, conciliatory, looking for compromise, bring sides together to talk, everyone included in the talk. It's not just refreshing. It might actually be a spark that catches hold for the entire nation. And yes, I'm speaking to Trump supporters and Biden supporters and those who still don't know what they're going to do or decided they're not going to vote at all. That'll be coming up later over the next 2 hours. Tonight, of course, the concluding night of the GOP convention, President Trump will officially accept his party's nomination. And last night, Vice President Pence speaking, and he pointed out something that the DNC did not do, Biden did not do, all the nights they were on the air. He basically was repeating what I told you yesterday, that even CNN commentators were getting a little shaky over, that the DNC and Biden ignoring the riots, the violence in our streets. Violence in Portland every night of the DNC, and they never said word one about it. Not one. And in fact, even Don Lemon Fruitcake of CNN said that they cannot ignore this. It's a blind spot for Democrats. They better find a way to deal with it, because all the polls are showing folks don't like this, regardless of their political leanings. They want the streets safe, not just from rioting and violence like that, but gangs and other violence on the streets. Well, Biden has finally made a statement. He finally made a statement. I'll let you hear that later, a little bit later. Something else the DNC never discussed, which you thought might have been something really they would want to hang their hat on. Of course, they didn't mention the Russian collusion thing at all. They have had to acknowledge that that didn't exist, had to go away from it. And, of course, they didn't mention the fact that they tried to impeach President Trump, that the House did vote to impeach him, and then, of course, it went to the Senate, where it was not carried out. That was just absolutely ignored. Interesting. The new details coming out about the shooting at Kenosha, Wisconsin, and the shooting of Jacob Blake. New details being released by police. From what I've seen, I'm reading either something that's conflicting or one story filed ahead of the other and didn't include it. There is one story that says that Blake even acknowledged there was a knife on the floorboard. Another story indicates he doesn't say anything like that. We're going to break down some of that because let's look at that in more detail. And also, the hurricane lashing the coast, hitting Lake Charles, Louisiana, direct impact. I've got relatives and friends in that area. Haven't heard from them, but that's an area reported severely damaged. If you've got friends and relatives along there, I feel for you. One young girl killed might have been due to a tornado dropping a tree on her home as opposed to the hurricane winds. And it's still going to continue to be a dangerous storm as it moves up to the Midwest area, at least into the Memphis area. All right, we'll keep an eye on all of that and others. A lot more material for you. James Carafano will join us in the next 2 hours. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
Tom Wellington and his staff at Wellington Environmental have certainly been busy over the last several weeks, making sure businesses and hospitals and nursing homes are clear of COVID-19. As you begin to reopen, try to restart your business, I would encourage you to contact Wellington Environmental. I'll give you a phone number in a moment. They can come in, assess the situation at a very reasonable cost, and make sure your facility is clear of COVID-19. And even after you're open, if something comes up and you're not sure, again, you want to contact Wellington Environmental. And not only for COVID-19, for any other threat, mold, any toxic situation. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. In business for 30 years, you know they're doing it right. Be well with Wellington Environmental. I want to thank my friends at John Bill Roofing for sponsoring this segment of Larry Connors USA. John Bill Roofing, covering homes, businesses throughout the Midwest with the best quality and lowest price. John Bill Roofing. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
You ain't nothing but a hound.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Last week, Joe Biden didn't say one word about the violence and chaos engulfing cities across this country. So let me be clear. The violence must stop, whether in Minneapolis, Portland, or Kenosha. Too many heroes have died defending our freedom to see Americans strike each other down. We will have law and order on the streets of this country for every American of every race and creed and color.
Those are the words last night of Vice President Pence as he accepted his party's nomination to once again run with President Trump on the ticket. And as I said, tonight President Trump will be speaking. That address was given in front of a crowd at Fort McHenry in Baltimore. And of course, that's where the raising of the American flag during the War of 1812 inspired Francis Scott Key to write the poem that later became the Star-Spangled Banner. Pence said, "The hard truth is you won't be safe in Joe Biden's America." And, of course, he's talking about all this violence we've had in the streets. We've had it in Seattle. We've had it in L.A., in Chicago, St. Louis, Detroit, Oakland, Minnesota, Minneapolis, I should say, Kenosha, Wisconsin, another case. I want to get into some details on the Kenosha, Wisconsin thing, on some new developments. Before I do, though, there's some things that I want to share. A little bit later, we're going to be joined by James Carafano. We're going to speak specifically about this issue of violence in the streets and how it's beginning to play out for the American public and how it's not going to be good for the Democrats if they continue to to take a kind of laissez-faire attitude or even encouraging, even if it's encouraging by their silence. And in fact, we're going to spend more time on that as well in the second hour. I think it is a pressing issue in front of our nation. Yes, COVID is a very big issue, clearly. And it is certainly true that you're more likely maybe to have someone in your family or you affected by COVID in one phase or another. If nothing else, if nothing else, having to wear a mask every time you go in somewhere, then you will be by rioting in the streets, arson, looting, and wild shooting in the street. But Americans, regardless of their political stripes, their religion, even their color, are fed up with this kind of violence in the streets. Then the question is, who do you blame? Well, of course, the shooting the other night, or the other day in the afternoon, broad daylight, in Kenosha, Wisconsin, the latest case where officers shot a black man. The details coming out, let me share with you what I've seen from different sources. And I'll give you the source for it so you understand why it's presented the way it is. And again, I don't know firsthand anything more than what I'm sharing with you. And I would doubt anyone listening knows firsthand any more than what you've heard or read. I'm not even sure if some of those who were on the scene actually know all the facts and full facts. I'm not even sure, and that would include police officers on the scene. All right, now here's the situation was, of course, police had been called to the area for an issue. Here's the way this is being reported by CNN in their titled article, Authorities Finally, and they put that word in that fashion as if, see, they've been trying to conceal it. But you don't rush out information until you get the facts. I mean, that's you just have to accept the fact that if you're going to be factual and you're going to have truth, you're going to have to spend some time interviewing, getting details. But they have already put the spin on it that finally give their first version. Here's the full article title. Authorities finally give their first version of the police shooting of Jacob Blake 3 days later. That's accurate by what they're stating. It's just the spin. And then the opening line. After 3 days of silence, nightly protests, fatal shootings at a protest, and a wildcat strike across the sports world, Wisconsin law enforcement officials finally offered their first version of the Kenosha police shooting of Jacob Blake. Wednesday night, the Wisconsin Department of Justice Criminal Division investigation said the incident stemmed from a domestic dispute. Now, here's apparently the way it went down, as it's written by CNN now. Officers arrived at the scene, attempted to arrest Blake, a 29-year-old black man, used a taser in a failed attempt to stop him, according again to the Department of Justice Division Criminal Investigation of Wisconsin. Blake walked around his vehicle, opened the driver's side door, and leaned forward. All of that is on video. We've got it up at Larry Connors USA Facebook in the sense of not the taser, but that they were trying to stop him. He continued walking around. I have seen the video from another source, and you still don't see much of it other than he's surrounded by officers and other people, and I couldn't make out enough, let me tell you that, as to if he's really resisting, fighting, or what is going on at the time. The incident apparently began, and again, according to CNN, the way it's reporting from police, that a woman called police saying her boyfriend was present, not supposed to be on the premises. And a police call dispatcher names Blake by the name and says he's not supposed to be there, and that he took the complainant's keys and refused to leave. The dispatcher later explained she didn't have more details because the caller was uncooperative. So that's what the police have arrived on. This is another domestic-type dispute. This should serve notice again to all of those who want to defund police and strip them of power and that we don't need them. We don't need them to handle things like this. We can send social workers to a domestic dispute. This is the kind of thing where you would send supposedly one of these social justice warriors to come out and try to make peace and talk. It would not have escalated to someone being shot because they wouldn't carry a gun. But what else could happen? We don't know. I'm not trying to suppose or project anything. I'm just trying to make a point that so-called domestic disputes can turn violent. In this case, you might want to blame the police for making the violence. The Department of Justice Division Criminal Investigation for Wisconsin states Blake admitted he had a knife in his possession, and law enforcement agents said they recovered a knife from the driver's side floorboard of his vehicle. And then it adds, it releases the first official police version of events, still leaves gaping holes in timeline, only the outlines of an explanation. Does not indicate why police moved to arrest Blake, whether he did brandish or threaten to use the knife. Well, I'll tell you this, by the video I saw, he didn't have it in his hands, and he did not try to use it at that point. And then the question of why the officer shot him so many times in the back, and that the official report doesn't mention his children in the vehicle or other family members standing just feet away. The video clearly shows that he is walking around. I see no weapon in his hands. Clearly he is disobeying instructions to stop, stand still, freeze, opens the door, leans in. One officer grabs him by his shirt to pull him back, but now he's leaning forward, hands down near the floorboard. That does not say he was reaching for the knife, but according to even Blake, at least as quoted at this time by police, unless he changes the story, he had a knife on the floorboard. Was he reaching for it? There's no word on that. He's not stating, and yet police say they did find one. Why so many shots fired? 7 times. And only one officer doing the shooting. There was another one right behind him, but apparently the one officer was the only one who did the shooting. I'm not going to make excuses at all here. I want you to keep that in mind. When one shot is fired, it could be the fog of war in a war zone, much less a situation like this. You don't know who actually fired that shot. The officer that pulled the trigger, he knows he fired that shot. Others didn't know, but they did not respond. They didn't start firing. He continued firing. And he continued firing because the premise is on police is that you shoot till the threat ceases, and he apparently felt that he was still losing control of Blake, that he was still getting into the car for whatever he was after. And in that instant, the officer did what he did. Every police officer out there, regardless of their color, their gender, their age, want to go home at night to be with their family. And they encounter something, and suddenly it flashes in front of them, I might not see my kids or family again. Same happens with anyone stopped by police if they think police are going to be excessive and brutal. I'm sorry, but the first rule still is, comply with police. I got stopped several months ago on a trip. I'm out of this area where anybody would know me. I certainly didn't know the officers. I get stopped, pulled over. I'm speeding. I'm responsible for it. I was speeding. And I go a little bit farther down the road because I don't want to stop on this two-lane road. I think it would put the officer at threat. So I kind of pull down where there's a dirt road so I can pull in, and I pull off there. And when he gets out, he is fuming at me. Why didn't you stop? I said, well, I thought I'd move to a better, safer area for you. You stop when I turn on the lights. Yes, sir. I was just trying. You stop when I turn on the lights. I said, yes, sir. I kept my hands in full view up on the dashboard of the steering wheel. And then he asked me, do you have any weapons? I'm not going to lie, because if I lie and he decides to take me out of the car for some reason and find it, then I'm going to be charged. I say, I do. I have one. It's on my hip. And he said, do not move your hands. I said, I promise you I will not. Now, what if I decided, let me show it to you anyway and reach for it? What do you think he's going to do? This is not to justify any police shooting, much less what happened in Kenosha. But you got to put yourself in the shoes of those officers. And sometimes there have been folks that have been so against police and the way they do things, that had gone through such training, and they later come out and say, wow, that happened so fast, I don't know. I was in a training exercise one time. Actually, a couple different ones, but one in particular where I shot, by the scenario, I shot a police officer several times. He comes through the door unexpected. I'm expecting problems and troubles at my house as someone inside and trying to find my daughter. I've already found one intruder. This guy comes through the door with a pistol in his hand, and I start shooting. I don't mean I fire one or two shots. I fire repeatedly. Now, if it had been real bullets and he had fallen down, would I have continued? I'm not going to say I would have stopped. I'm just saying I would have made sure he's no longer a threat. And they told me later, he shouted police three different times as he came through the door. I never heard it. You get in some scenarios, you have auditory blockout. You do not hear. That involves in something for everyone. Be you on the side of the law or on the other side. We'll take a while before we get more details on Blake. But there was something else that took place with another shooting in there. Two people shot and killed and one injured. What happened in that case? A white man with a gun that claimed he was, what, a member of a vigilante committee or enforcing the law? Let's look at that when we continue.
Making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
All right, so we discussed the shooting of Jacob Blake, the black man shot seven times in the back by an officer as Blake is reaching into his car after he's been told repeatedly, stop, don't move, and he continued to do so. Then there's a shooting that took place that night and some of the rioting taking place. And it shows clearly a man walking down the street with a gun of some type. I don't know if it's been identified as an AR-15. It's a white guy. He eventually walks toward police with his hands up with the gun strapped around his shoulder. Prior to that, he's in the midst of people, gets knocked down, and starts shooting. And then gets up as others are running from him, then turns and walks toward police, and again raises his hands, puts the gun to the side, and is following commands as they approach. Now, who was this guy and what was he doing? In the beginning, we didn't know. Was it someone protecting their property from burning or looting, or what was it? Well, apparently it happened, and judging by the video, strictly in the street. The police chief has said, first of all, none of this would have happened if everybody obeyed the curfew. But let's don't excuse it that fast, the shooting itself. It turns out this is a 17-year-old from Illinois. I don't know if he lives down the Kenosha, Wisconsin area or not, or he just went there because of the events breaking open. I don't know. 17-year-old supposedly was a police cadet at one time, I guess in high school, riding or learning with police work and so forth, and for some reason decided he wanted to take a rifle of some type and go out into the streets that night. And when he opened fire, two people were killed, and they're saying he's responsible. This white kid deciding to go on the streets with a rifle is the one who shot the people that got killed, and maybe one injured. He is being charged with that. Now, originally that night, as some of the story began to broke, I shouldn't say that night, one of the nights, Fox News host Tucker Carlson appeared to defend him, saying authorities were standing back and watched Kenosha burn while the teenager was trying to maintain order. I don't know where Carlson came up with the idea and the statement. I think it was a wrong statement to make. And you can't defend someone simply out in the middle of the street shooting people. He has been roundly criticized for appearing to praise vigilante actions and justify murder. In this case, I caught Tucker Carlson for being wrong. Probably shouldn't have said anything, because I doubt he had all the facts either at that point. Some have questioned, well, why didn't police shoot this guy? He's got a gun. He's right down the street. Why didn't they just light him up? That's a good question. And if he started toward them and began to wave the rifle around, I have no doubt they would have. But he quickly dropped it to his side, still strapped to his body, and raised his hands after he's fired several times into the crowd and now moving toward them. If police had shot him at that point with his hands up, even though he had the rifle around him, there'd be another discussion. This time it's a white kid. If it had been a black kid, would they have done the same thing? I know that question persists. You do not know officially. You might have a perception of your own, but we don't know for a fact, do we? We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with James Carafano. We're going to talk about the rioting in the streets, the violence. Please stand by.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm local tax attorney Lance Drury, and I've represented hundreds of individuals and small businesses in disputes with the IRS. So if you've been contacted for past due tax debt or haven't filed taxes in a while, contact me, Lance Drury. And because each client's case is unique, we'll meet face-to-face and go over your tax situation in detail. Together, we'll develop a strategy to resolve your tax issues. I'm experienced, I know your rights, and I'll give you honest answers. Under my 8-point plan, my firm will file the necessary forms needed to resolve your issue with the IRS, and you won't have to worry about talking to their agents. I'll negotiate on your behalf to get you the lowest settlement allowed by law. At the Lance Drury Law Firm, we want to make sure that you're satisfied with the outcome. So call me now, tax resolution attorney Lance Drury, 314-238-7360, or go to LanceDrurylaw.com.
The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely upon advertisements.
Well, I started out with $1 million, gambled with a man and I won me another, bought me a gun and I robbed my brother. I'm bad, but I don't care, boys. Gonna be a millionaire.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
My guest has been on numerous times. Always glad to have him. A West Point grad, 25 years in the Army, retiring as a lieutenant colonel, now vice president of foreign defense policy studies. James J. Carafano at Heritage Foundation. Welcome, James.
Hey, great to be with you.
Well, I want to get into, before you join us, by the way, I spent a lot of time talking about some of the violence in the streets coming with some of the actions recently, such as the shooting of the black man, Blake, the other day in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and then also a kid, a white kid in the street doing the shooting and killing two others. But well, let's focus on the rioting itself. You put out an article, I noticed, that just was published, yesterday with the Fox News. And the opening line, folks, reads, "The organized violence plaguing Portland and other cities has already lasted longer than Kid Rock's marriage to Pamela Anderson." That's a sad fact, but go ahead, sir.
Well, you know, one of the things in the article, why we have to be concerned about this, is not just because of the organized violence itself, but that for some radicals that agree with that agenda, that violence isn't enough, right? And they think, well, you know, we need to step it up. And then there's always the problem of kind of counter-radicals, which look at this as a green light to go to the street to do their own violence. I think that's exactly what we're seeing now. And it's almost like, you know, I just want to say, I told you so. I mean, if we don't deal with this issue, can become a much, much bigger problem. They will find other cities to go to. They will inspire or attract other people even more violent than they are. And this will really, I'm afraid, really will create something of a very serious public safety challenge.
I've got a specific quote I'll put in front of you in a moment, but let me continue going through your article first. You make five points, five reasons why these radicals feel emboldened, and you begin with, we're facing a capable enemy.
Well, that's absolutely true. Look, when you look at Portland's, you know, a great example, 90-plus days of violence, there is obviously organization there, there's structure, there's logistical support, there's a legal strategy, there's a media strategy. So there's no question that there is not an organized group behind this. And one of the things that we really, really need is we need the federal government to start doing RICO investigations, because RICO, you know, the organizing criminal activity is itself a crime, and it's one really the federal government is really best equipped to take on. We need to be investigating who is organizing this activity.
And funding it, because organization also involves money.
Well, and then, you know, one of my real concerns here is I think a lot of organizations and businesses, you know, gave all kinds of money, maybe in a very well-meaning way, to want to battle social injustice and racism. Tens of millions of dollars, they may have no idea where that money is going and whose coffers it's going into. How much of it could actually be funding criminal activity?
Yeah, I pointed out several times, and in fact, whether or not it's being used like that, sometimes the money came from basic extortion. You either give it to us or we're going to label you as racist. You point out item number four, a reason why they're so emboldened, is there's a war on our streets.
Yeah, look, you know, what I tell you, the one that really, really caught my attention, because I don't know if you saw this Kyle yesterday, about was another one of these CNN peaceful things, and there's obviously a fire going around, so there's no shooting,
yeah.
But there's clearly arson going around, and arson happening there. And one of my great concerns is that the media is really becoming an enabler, because what they're doing is they're normalizing violence, and they're saying, violence is okay, the looting is okay, and what that does is it definitely creates an environment to the virus to spiral, because they're essentially enabling what really is criminal activity.
Yeah, you're referring specifically to their CNN national correspondent, Omar Jimenez, was reporting in the early hours at Kenosha, fire raging behind him. Despite that, he's saying everything's good here and peaceful, and crawling across the screen says, fiery but mostly peaceful protest after police shooting. So, again, as you're saying, the media's failed us. You also point out the local officials have failed us.
No, this is absolutely true. If you look, for example, in Oregon, the district attorney's office essentially has been the chief enabler. People have been arrested. They're letting them go, even without charges. The district attorneys themselves are activists who share the agenda of the people. They are not impartisan law enforcement officers. I think this is a great problem. And what we have here is, in my mind, are public officials who are too cowardly to make a call between legitimate protests on racial equality and criminal activity that is organized violence. They're unwilling to parse that line for afraid that somebody might accuse them of being on the wrong side of it.
Yeah, and I don't, let me see, I had a story, I don't know if I have that one handy or not, specifically, you know, one guy was charged and convicted of arson, and they basically gave him probation and community service. That's what you're going to get for arson in Portland, I guess, at this point.
Well, a lot of it's worse than that. A lot of people are not even being charged. They're being arrested, brought in, and the district attorney's just letting them go. People have committed multiple acts of rioting and violence. And again, you know, at some point here, as we see in Kenosha, Wisconsin, the violence starts to escalate and people are dying. I mean, there are reported instances of rioters trying to trap people inside buildings and set fire to them. This is attempted murder. You know, I'll give you a good example. You know, the couple in St. Louis that were guarding their property. And
right.
You know, they were charged with a crime.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of video that there are people that are trespassing, that are threatening them, and are destroying property. Three real crimes. And tons of video where you're seeing these people's faces. No prosecution. No arrest. How is that even possible?
Well, there's been problems inside St. Louis City with the prosecutor anyway to begin with on between police officers and that prosecutor anyway. Another point, though, that you point out, and this is something that I think stood out in the DNC the other day, that the politicians are failing us. Not once during the night of the DNC, even while Portland was burning, did they say anything about it. And Biden just today, or late yesterday, finally issued some 20-second soundbite, yeah, we shouldn't do that.
Yeah. So, you know, it's very clear that the partisan political atmosphere we are devolving into this argument that says, well, they want to talk about law and order. So the real problem here is, you know, COVID and the public health problem. As if our country cannot deal with two issues simultaneously. And essentially, they're making the argument that addressing law enforcement and the safety on our streets is a distraction, you know, from dealing with COVID. This is nonsense. And it's a colossal moral failure of people that just want to pick the problems that are politically correct for them.
Well, the quote I want to share with you, apparently Marxist activist Angela Davis warning that the street demonstrations, as apparently quoting John Berger, Marxist cultural critic, these demonstrations, the street demonstrations, are, quote, rehearsals for revolution.
That's interesting. I mean, my concern here is the people that are excusing the rioting, the violence, and everything else, what they're essentially doing is asserting their own moral authority above the rule of law. So they're saying, what I believe is more important than what the law says. That is a new form of tyranny. I mean, that's a form of fascism. You're substituting your own value system for the agreed-upon laws of the country. That's a big, big problem. And to see it professed by political leaders and leading media voices is incredibly disturbing.
Well, just last Saturday, Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, Democrat, Massachusetts, called for, quote, more unrest, saying there needs to be unrest in the streets for as long as there's unrest in our lives.
Well, okay, the irony here, of course, is we're fighting for people. Well, the problem with that is the people that you're fighting for, their lives are being destroyed. Their businesses are being burned to the ground. They're unsafe in their own homes. They can't go out on the street. They can't take their kids and protest safely. So the irony is the people that they stay defending are really the worst victims of their violence. I mean, look, that city in Kenosha, I mean, who's going to come in and fix that city after it's ravaged and destroyed? You know, where's mom going to go to buy groceries because the Target's been burned to the ground? I don't buy that argument.
One of your colleagues at the Heritage Foundation, Laura Rice, also did a piece for the Detroit News saying these endless riots are not saving black lives. They are destroying lives. They're destroying businesses. They're rendering the social fabric of the entire city, which I think echoes just what you said.
So, you know, I live in Washington, D.C., which is a wonderful city. It was completely devastated by riots in the 1960s. It was hammered by riots in the 1980s. It took us decades to bring the city back and make it livable for its residents.
Point made.
The notion of, you know, look, I mean, you remember the ancient Roman thing? It says, you know, we made the land a desert and called it peace. I mean, that's essentially what's going on here.
James, I got to run. I want to thank you again for taking time to share your thoughts with us on this, and I think many agree that we just can't have it like this. I do appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you, my friend.
You bet. James Carafano, Heritage Foundation. We're going to take a break. When we come back, many of those blacks who have spoken at the Republican National Convention are being labeled as tokens. Stand by, please.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
Give me the This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Mr. Vice President, look at me. I am black. We are not all the same, sir. I am not in chains. My mind is my own. And you can't tell me how to vote because of the color of my skin.
Those remarks, of course, came from the other night at the Republican National Convention. And they were very powerful remarks. They were given by the Kentucky Attorney General Cameron that made those remarks saying, you can't tell me how to vote based on the color of my skin. He was one of several black Americans who have spoken on behalf of President Trump and the Republican Party. And in the process, of course, he also talks about we need to ensure justice against lawlessness and chaos. So he's in the process of doing that. And the reaction might be summed up to some extent by some on the left because they have continually condemned, slandered, attacked any black Americans who want to indicate they're going to vote for Trump or have. An opinion piece appearing in the Daily Beast yesterday after the Kentucky Attorney General had made his remark, written by Kaylee Holloway, mocking him, saying that he's hell-bent on destroying the traditional way of life. I'm sorry, she's talking about Covington Catholic High School student Nick Sandman. She got into all kinds of things. But then when it came to Cameron, again, she, like others, had said that they're using them as props and said that the Kentucky Attorney General, duly elected Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron, first Republican elected to that position in 70 years, the first black ever, and speaking at this year's Republican National Convention, is just a token minority. And then, of course, last night, another black man spoke. His name, Clarence Henderson. Hear what he had to say.
Freedom of thought is a powerful thing. Donald Trump is not a politician. He's a leader. Politicians are a dime a dozen. Leaders are priceless. He has done more for black Americans in 4 years than Joe Biden has done in 50.
I guess that would be someone else they would consider a token black. Clarence Henderson is a civil rights pioneer. In 1960, he was part of that infamous or famous, depending on your description, of the sit-in movement in Greensboro, North Carolina, as groups of young black teenagers, male and female, would sit down at store counters, lunch counters, and of course not be served or be ordered out or be arrested. Now, he was not one of the original Greensboro Four that started that on February 1, 1960, but he did join the effort the second day. He said, for 18 years, every time I went into Woolworths, it defined me. Because I went in and I saw downstairs two water fountains, one saying colored, one saying white. There were separate bathrooms, no one doing anything about it. He said, if we wanted to get anything to eat, we had to go to the rear and order our food to go, and yet it cost the same. So he said, that's when we began our sit-ins. There were 176 days of people carrying out those protests. And those were, of course, peaceful protests, following Martin Luther King Jr.'s approach, not rioting in the streets. And Clarence Henderson addressed that in his remarks last night at the GOP convention.
These are not protests as I participate in. When you start violence and mayhem, that you're committing tyranny upon the people. And when that occurs, then something has to be done to stop it, because we got people out here that are trying to run businesses, living their lives, and are not able to because some people have presupposed that they are entitled. So what we've got systemic corruption, not systemic racism.
Now, that's an interesting point. Whether or not you agree with his statement, he's paid a price to make that statement. Joining in 1960 as part of the sit-in movement that started in Greensboro. Nowadays, no one really thinks anything or shouldn't really think anything of walking in, taking a seat at a counter. Maybe some black person's already sitting there, or while you're sitting there, a black person comes. Or a black person is working there and serving you. Using the same water fountain, the same bathroom. We have changed. Have we accomplished everything we should and gotten rid of every piece of thread that represented racism? No. But his point being, our issue now is not systemic racism, but systemic violence and rioting and crime. We'll take a break and we'll have news and commentary, and then after that, more on the issue of the Democrats finally waking up and acknowledging we better say something about these riots in the streets. That's coming up. Please stand by.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.